All right, welcome back. This week's episode of The Big Ticket Life. Love that you're here. And my amazing guest, Bob Wheeler, has stopped by. Bob, welcome to the show.
Jeff, thanks so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's a timely episode for us to get together with Christmas right around the corner, right? That's a big topic related to money.
Sure.
I love this topic because it transcends a lot of different things that I feel people have in their lives, whether you're starting out with a budget in life, whether you have a business, whether you're making a bunch of money and you don't know what to do with it, whether you feel money just eludes you. We're going to jump into all of that. But, you know, Bob, where I thought we'd kick off is we'll get into what you do, who you are. You know, in our show notes, people can connect with you. But I want to kick off right away with something that I feel is relevant to a lot of people, because I think children and teenagers touch, obviously, parents' lives, grandparents' lives, your niece, your nephew, your cousins, et cetera. You know, you shared with me in the pre-show some conversations you just had with college students. Where are we missing and where are opportunities for high school students, teenagers, young adults to learn about money and establish a great relationship with money?
Yeah, so surprisingly, one of the biggest things that's not happening is just conversations around money, normalized conversations around money. What I've discovered, parents think that they need to be experts, and so they don't have all the answers, so they'd rather just not talk about it instead of just saying, hey, I don't know much about this, let's look at it together. The big thing that I discovered when I was talking to the college kids saying, hey, what's the biggest difference from high school to college now that you're here? The support system. Mom and dad aren't paying for meals. I've got to pay rent. And for some of these kids, it was a shocker. Some of them said, like, this was crazy. And so that was interesting to me that they didn't realize there was such a big gap from being at home, having a support system, to jumping into, I've got to make decisions every day, and I got to make sure I got money by the end of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. You know, we have our 19-year-old son. This time of year, I always get a little foggy because their birthdays are both, my two boys are February and March. So I start speaking about them as they are going to be respectively 16 and 20 in the new year. But our current 19-year-old lives at home. You know, college was not a good fit for him right after high school. So he's kind of building a career with our local Chick-fil-A. And so that's a really great thing to put on his resume as he builds his career out, wherever that may take him. But what we are doing is he's very familiar with what things cost. He's very familiar with what a car payment is. I mean, I bought and paid for his first classic 95 F-150 truck, which I personally love. Like, when he's done with it, it's back to me. and then he's got a Mustang because he wanted a Mustang. So we talked about what it would take to do that, the milestones to say, to help him again. But he's paying rent. He pays a rent fee. He contributes to groceries. And then on top of that all, there's still responsibilities around the house, because the small sum of rent that we ask for, it's about the habit, not so much about the dollar amount. You know, there's a lot of things that we do. Internet, gaming systems, you know, Netflix subscriptions, food in the fridge, anything you want, anytime, right? But it's all still there. And I think that some families just don't make that abundantly clear that those things cost money. It's not like there's magic grocery fairies and magic laundry fairies that make this stuff happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And even just that conversation of coming home from the grocery store, hey, what do you think we spent today? How much do you think this milk was? Like, it doesn't have to be rocket science conversations, just bringing awareness to, yeah, the electric bill was $400 this month. Oh, we got to pay these things. It doesn't just come from the little tree in the backyard, just indefinitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Those things can certainly derail someone as far as what a real reality and relationship with money is. As we dig in deeper, let's kind of take a step back and let people know who you are and you know, what's brought us together today? What's been your journey with money over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a CPA by day. I started an accounting practice. I've got about 1,000 clients. I'm also the CFO, COO of the world famous Comedy Store in Hollywood and La Jolla. And basically, I had my own money journey and I was not walking the talk. I was telling everybody else what to do, but I was the exception to the rule. And I realized I had to do my own personal work and start sharing stories because I found in my practice, my tax practice, I could give people amazingly practical sound advice and they'd go out and do the exact opposite. And I work with a lot of creatives and I needed to understand what's going on for them emotionally, because if I can't understand that piece first, I can't actually help them with the practical, because I can't get them to take it in.
Yeah. So the Comedy Store, like the place where a lot of up and coming and top comics have been, gone, continue to come back to. That's, you're involved there.
Absolutely. It's I just opened for Pauly Shore this past weekend down in La Jolla. I did 5 shows with Pauly Shore and that was pretty awesome.
Fantastic.
So, I actually started out as a comic and the Comedy Store got into a little bit of financial trouble. And Mitzi called me up and says, "Hey, you gotta help us out." And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to be a comic. She's like, no. So I've been at the store 25 plus years and it's been great because it forced me to make sure my accounting practice was successful so I could afford to help out the club when they didn't have any money.
Yeah. It's so funny that you referenced the Comedy Store and Mitzi. And I don't really have any other connection to it other than I've heard on some other podcasts, Rogan's podcast, namely.
Yeah.
And I listened to the Pauly Shore one. That was just in the last maybe 6 weeks or so, I'm thinking. But he did the voice of Mitzi just like you did.
Everybody just, does. Everybody does.
Just as a total aside. as a total aside there, you know, you talked about normalizing the conversations around money. So we should be doing that with our children.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, with our spouses too. I think there's an awful lot that goes on there, right?
Yeah.
If you're, I know some things I've seen where you've got a spouse that's got the business and it's not going great.
Right.
And the other spouse has no clue at all that they're 6, 7, 8 figures in debt. Between business debt, personal debt, credit card debt, they've tapped the house. So normalizing those conversations, normalizing with the kids, something that I do with my team is, and it's never meant to be a negative thing, but I do remind them when these interesting bills come in, you know, operating a business. And as an accounting CPA, you're aware of these bills I'm speaking of, things like liability insurance. The never-ending fees and taxes and things that come from your city. The other day, I was in the office and looking through some of the mail, and it's like there's $6,000 of bills here that have nothing to do with the retail store that I. So I co-own a retail mattress store,
right?
As one of my ventures, and like that has nothing to do with inventory. It has nothing to do with fulfilling this product that any reasonable person would think happens, but here it is, $6,000. You know,
yeah, there's all that overhead. We don't want to think about it. We got to pay it.
Yeah. And so I always just have those conversations with my team because to me, I think it establishes that relationship with what happens in the business. And I think this translates to what happens in your life, right? You need to understand what your inflow and outflow is and just be really clear with it. So when my team lets somebody leave our store, this is a big KPI we're measuring right now, is our missed opportunities number. So if we always want to sell something, naturally, if we're a right fit and we affirm that with our customer, we make the sale. It's pretty much a process with ease. If they're not ready to buy, we want to advance that journey and get a quote. And so it's either that sale or quote. It's kind of that binary. Then we have the third one, missed opportunities number, where it just doesn't happen. We try to get that to zero each week because when that door swings, there's a dollar amount that comes in and it's wrapped up in that $6,000 of insurance and this fee. And I forget what the other chunk was for. But that doesn't matter. It was for something. And, you know, it just creates that relationship that there is a cost of doing business here each and every day, whether we sell something or not. Any stories that you can share along that way from your experience?
Well, you know, you touched on something to me that's super important. You just said relationship. And I think one of the biggest things in business, this is, again, my personal take, if we're not relational, if we're just being transactional, I got to make the sale. You got to buy this stuff. Instead of, hey, I want to be in relationship, I've got something that could help you. So I've got something that will make your life better. I want to do this to make your life better, not I just want to get money out of your pocket. And like, I have 1,000 tax clients. It's all relational. I am not, yes, there are some transactions that happen, but I'm more interested in long-term than making a quick $5. I'm looking for the relationships. And I think sometimes people miss that. And I think in this day and age, people are looking for real relationships, real connections, even in business, because there's so much going on and there's so much distraction.
Yeah. No, I agree with all of that. You know, building on that relationship theme for our conversation, you know, I'm a long-term believer that it's never a good idea to establish a relationship in crisis.
Right.
Right. And so, especially when it involves money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so from your view, obviously you have that experience. You've built one business, afforded you to go pursue the comedy store, which is very cool.
Yeah.
This is why I love podcasting, just as an aside. Like, you never exactly know who's across the microphone until we get to do the thing. And here's this comedy store connection. So that's very cool. But you've built your practice, your CPA practice, accounting firm practice.
Yeah.
That afforded you the opportunity to go pursue another venture.
Right.
So in building relationships, what are the things people kind of need to have, especially as it relates to dollars and cents? What are the things they need to have a good foundation of relationship with people that might lend them money, that might help them leverage and scale their business?
Well, I mean, for me, the first thing that comes up is integrity, right? I want to be in integrity. If I'm looking to borrow money, if I'm looking to give money, I want to make sure that the people that I'm working with have integrity, and that we're being transparent with each other. And I also think, you know, when I'm trying to go into relationship with somebody, I don't want to be doing it out of desperation. I'm in a really fortunate situation where I can pick and choose my clients. If I'm desperately trying to pay the rent and I'm just taking somebody that has no respect for me, treats my staff poorly, but I just want that money, and so I'm willing to sell my soul just so I can pay the rent, like, that's got long-term repercussions. And to be able to sit and say, yeah, that's actually not going to serve me, to actually pause and decide if I want to be in relationship versus I desperately need this relationship, because it's not an even playing field if I'm coming from a place of want and need to just keep me alive.
Yeah, those acts of desperation, I need to make the sale to pay the rent or pay the mortgage or whatever. And listen, I think in business, I've got a feeling you've probably had those months where your back's been up against the wall.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Not fun.
No, it's not. But when your back's against the wall, it's how you respond in that moment of that opportunity to keep your integrity. Yeah. That's where I think people go left and right. Like, they stay on the right path with integrity. They know they've got a good process. They know they've got a good product. They know they serve their customers well. You're just in this spot and you got to dig a little harder in those silos, in those verticals. It's where, when you go make a left turn, I see this a lot with some of my contemporaries, where, you know, as an example, someone took their box truck out to a parking lot, and just not a parking lot they had a lease on, not a parking lot that they even did business in that shopping center. It's just where a bunch of foot traffic was. And so they just went out and threw down some product in the middle of the parking lot, and they made a few sales.
Right.
But man, I don't know. That's certainly nothing you can build on. And from an integrity move, it's kind of without integrity as far as I'm concerned. A lot of hustle, but not so much integrity.
Yeah. And then you have, where do I go back to if there's an issue, or if I want more of it, or I want to tell my friend, oh, it was a fly by night.
Exactly.
Maybe there's a flash sale that something good comes out of. But yeah, for me, like our business, we're here 12 months out of the year. And so a lot of accounting, you know, tax practices, they're gone in April and you can't find anybody until the next year. We're around all the time. We're here for our folks.
Yeah. Yeah. To drill down a little more tactically around taxes, which is a mouthful. I see it now and it's really starting to heat up now. You know, I'm sure you're online, various social circles, networks, channels, et cetera. I'm starting to see from my fellow business owner peers, hey, looks like I'm going to have a big liability. What do I do? Is that the right question to ask on December 19th or the wrong question?
No, it's a good question. I like to start asking it mid-November, right around Thanksgiving. You still have time. And actually, right now, Thanksgiving until next week, busiest time of the year, because this is when we're doing our tax planning. Did we establish a pension plan? Probably too late for that at this point. But certain things, got to ask the questions. Do I stall deposits? Do I accelerate spending? Am I on accrual basis? Do I sign some contracts? Do I buy equipment? And looking at those things now versus after the first of the year, when that ship may have already sailed, this is an important time to be looking at those numbers and getting a real sense of where you're going to land. I'm not a surprise kind of person. I don't like good surprises. I don't like bad surprises. When I get to March and April, I want to be right on the money or pretty close. If I'm going to owe money, I want to know it. So I've prepared. I've worked with a couple of tax people. I hear them talking to the client. Hey, John, you need to wire $150,000 on Friday. And I hear the guy having a heart attack in the back going, what? I mentioned it 6 months ago. You might owe this, right? No, I want my clients to know. I want them to be able to sleep at night. I want them to have the best information. And we pivot when we get new information, but I am in constant communication with most of my clients. I'm like, anything happens, let me know. Let me know.
Right.
It has impact. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never too good to be on the receiving end, like you said, of either a good surprise or a bad surprise. Those big 5-6 figure tax bills are not fun at all.
Not at all.
And on that note, this is a loaded question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there a favorite tax savings deduction or process procedure that you like? And I know it's not going to be something that applies to everybody.
That's, if it comes down to it, I like charity. Not everybody does because they don't see a benefit from that. I always like putting money into retirement accounts and equipment and stuff that's going to serve me in the long run.
Yeah. 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 Great answer. Actually, lets me turn a page in the conversation to charity. So, and it dovetails right back to where we started. Like things don't have to exist in this realm of perfection that someone else defines, right? Like you don't have to be the perfect parent to have a conversation about money with your kids.
Right.
And we'll dig into that a little more, like that relationship with money, because that's what your book's about, right?
Yeah.
Title of your book, again, it flashed on screen. I had it in front of me and I don't now.
That's the money nerve, navigating the emotions of money. Because if we don't navigate those emotions, the rest doesn't really matter, because internally what we're telling ourselves is the story we're really ultimately going with.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the ways to get a very positive, happy emotion around charity and donating money through charity and enjoying that tax benefit, knowing that your dollars went to the charity and not the government.
Right.
And in that realm of just starting 10 years ago, I just posted this last night on my personal social media. 10 years ago in the mattress store business, we had a call come out and it brought me to tears at the time, because that year, my business partner and I were fortunate to have had our second high-end European sleep system given to us by a recent vendor that we brought on the floor. And we get this message from the charity and it said, all these kids want is to not sleep on the floor.
Right.
They want bunk beds. They're brother and sister in one room. They just, They want to not sleep on the floor. Could you get them bunk beds and some mattresses? And the, of course, the answer was yes. And that's where we started. One thing, just that one donation. And we realized, wow, there really are, even though we live in a nice community, we serve a good county, there's still people dealing with having to sleep on the floor. And over the years, we just kind of continued to grow that, reached out to a couple people, just built. And then this year, we got very focused through our other podcast show we do called Lancaster Connects. We just focused all that energy on shining light on the community, but our dollars went to off the streets. And that gets people out of homelessness. And then I said at the end of this, since this is our last show of the year this week over there, I said, let me get the number to report out. I don't even know what it is. Came out to $34,212 worth of mattresses that we gave back to the community.
Nice.
Yeah. And so I share all that a little long-windedly. I apologize, because it was about the start.
Right.
And about doing something good. And I feel as business owners, we should have that mindset to give back to the community by which we sell into. If our community is not strong, we don't succeed.
Absolutely. And Jeff, to me, this is a great opportunity to point out where some people might say, oh, well, they're just selling beds. They're just selling shoes, right? What's the value of a good night's sleep? What's the value of having your taxes done by somebody that knows what they're doing? What's the value of having a comfortable shoe? These are things that a lot of people just take for granted. And they're like, whatever. And the thing is somebody that's sleeping on the street, yeah, a mattress goes a long way. It does for everybody. And I think sometimes we don't appreciate, I've traveled to a lot of developing countries where they're grateful if they have water, not even filtered water, not even hot water. And so there's so much we take for granted. A simple thing like a good night's sleep, not everybody gets that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And so we're very blessed, and it filled my heart with joy to see that number, not because it's a bigger number, but just because it's a number that we've committed to. And now we get to grow that year, you know, year after year after year. And it directly benefits our community.
Absolutely. And I think the other point here, what you're saying, it's not about the number. It's about doing something. And I think sometimes people don't take a step forward because it's not flashy enough. It's not big enough. It's not important enough. And every little small step that we do has an impact, even if not everybody sees it. And so I just encourage people to take that step and do something versus sitting back and judging that it's not enough or worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great point. We really can, you know, we really can have a lot of impact. You know, I've had the opportunity on our other show to interview this excommunicated Amish gentleman and his brother, who now run one of the largest food, I guess you could say it's like food upcycling and redistribution companies in the region, to where they'll get 40,000 pounds of ground beef that is otherwise going to hit the dumpster.
Yeah.
And they bring it into their processing center and save it and then get it out. And they process it through. So if you have a charitable organization and can show them you're going to give it away, you can come buy food for 31 cents a pound.
Wow.
All food. All meats, food, vegetables, you know, canned goods. And that started with the one brother just assembling a box of food at a time from some extra money in his paycheck.
Wow.
Because he struggled with food insecurity.
Yeah.
And so to your point, like, it just takes that start, that small step, which kind of dovetails in. I want to talk about, you said you've been to some developing countries. You know, so CPA, right? Am I saying that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Certified Public Accountant.
Because I know some people are just accountants and then some people are CPAs. I have it right here in front of me. I apologize.
No worries.
So CPA, great business, enough to go have some ownership in comedy store, telling jokes, following your passion there. Been to developing countries and you've climbed Kilimanjaro, got to the Mount Everest base camp. You've hiked some other smaller mountains. So where does that come from? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, if you're an accountant, it's pretty boring. So, you know, I got to have a little bit of it, you know, got to be a little interesting. You know, I think actually for me in the beginning, I think I was socialized that I'm only as good as my accomplishments. I sort of bought into that net value, net worth, right? Self-worth. And so I was socialized. I got to win. I got to do these things. I got to hit all these, marks. And so in the beginning, it was, I'm building a resume. But when I actually went over, I had an experience in Africa and these people were happy. And I'm like, what is wrong with these people? Like, they're freaking happy. They don't have shoes. They don't have electricity. They don't have, what is going on with these people? Don't they understand how they should be miserable? And it really changed my perspective. And what I realized was they were living in a place of gratitude. And they were grateful for what I considered trash. And it really forced me to re-examine my whole life when I came back. And if I was driving the fancy car just so I could impress people or make my mark. And what I really learned was I have so much to be grateful for. There might be somebody with more than me, but I'm not in the game of comparisons. I'm in the game of how am I going to show up in life and to just really start looking for the places where, man, I'm grateful I woke up this morning. I'm grateful that I've got water. I'm grateful that I can afford to pay taxes. And that has really shifted my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, that game of comparison is a big one. I think I feel it's really warping many people's minds, not just youth, but
yeah,
adults and even their grandparents. Just keeping up with the Joneses has been magnified to the point where this, you know, the level of consumerism and materialism is really a problem, and especially as it relates to money, because when people don't understand debt and the interest that goes along with debt, it can really put them in a tough, tough spot, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is kids today, one of the top jobs kids want to be when they grow up is an influencer. And right.
Yes.
And then they see it on social media and we're only seeing the pretty stuff, right? We're not seeing the fights. We're not seeing the trauma. We're not seeing the depression. Look how amazing my life is. Here's my trip. I'm not seeing the credit card debt to get that, to create that trip. I've talked with a few influencers I have some clients as influencers, but influencers as clients, but I've had a couple call me and say, look, I'm going to make a couple million this year. I talked to my friend, they don't pay any taxes. So I want you to do my stuff and I should pay zero taxes. And I'm like, you should find another accountant.
Right.
Because you're not living in reality. There's such a disconnect with a lot of people around money, taxes, responsibility, and starting to have those, again, normalizing conversations and creating healthier relationships with our finances.
Yeah. Yeah. The influencer thing, I understand why kids look at it, right? I mean, I think if you go back, you know, my parents' age, if you were a teenager in the mid-60s when the Beatles hit and you're a young man, you wanted, and seeing how all the girls responded, you wanted to pick up a guitar or a drum set and be a rock star.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
You know, if you were a young adult in the late 70s, early 80s, looking at Wall Street and the, maybe not so much the mid 80s, but, you know, looking at that decade, you know, you're like, wow, there's a lot of opportunity in finance, right? Because it was really glamorized.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't necessarily blame them, but yeah, there is this, there's such a falsehood. What they don't, like they see the 15 seconds to 60 second video. They don't see the 30 minutes of production that it took to create that.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, it's always the tip of the iceberg piece. We always see, look, they get overnight success. Yeah. 30 years of doing the hard work or running a business. Yeah. You know, I'm always amazed, whether it's accounting and other businesses, I've had CPAs come to work for me. They ran their own business for about 10 minutes and realized, oh, being a good CPA doesn't mean I'm also a good business owner. And,
right,
you know, I have to be both. And a lot of people just think, oh, it just happens. And there's some secret rule book that's just fixing everything as you go along. And yeah, you actually have to get in, engage, and do the work. And I think a lot of people, sort of bail on that stuff after a while when they're like, oh, I have to keep showing up. This is work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, you know, about knowing what it takes to run a business. I just had a call yesterday, with one of the top implementers and high in the food chain, guys in the EOS world. So entrepreneur operating system. I'm sure you've heard of that EOS.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I spoke to him because one of my passion projects is getting more. Consider that their county and local career centers are very viable options for building skills and careers and creating a career without having to go into the astronomical amount of debt that most have to go into for college. And one of the things was getting EOS into the business management entrepreneurship programs as a certified course. Because to graduate, you need, in your skill, in most every state, you need a skill shop curriculum correct certification. Well, these business management entrepreneurship programs, they have what pretty much, Bob, equates to the OSHA certification to avoid paper cuts. It's really not useful at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And where I'm going with this is, so you built a great CPA business. Mm-hmm. You must have had some incredible systems and process and procedure, because every client is individualized, right?
Yeah.
So how did you, maybe let's peel back a little bit of what you did there at a high level to help build that business.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the very beginning, because I still was focusing on net worth, self-worth kind of thing, the first 3 or 4 years, I thought nobody was going to come back every year. I'm like, oh my God, I hope people come back. And then I doubled the practice and I'm like, oh. So I had a little bit of fear around that. But what I did do, I made sure that I followed up. If somebody asked a question, I would make sure that I got in. Now I'm a little not as good at that sometimes because I've got so many people and thankfully I've got a great team. But following up with people, letting them know when they ask certain things, hey, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to find out. When I did the work, I made sure that I billed them while they were still happy and while they were eager to pay. I didn't. And so I really made sure that, not that I instilled fear in people, but I made sure that, like, pay the bill. Like, let me focus on helping you and not me focus on being a bank or a debt collector. And that was really important. And then creating systems where I could track the communication, to track my tax planning for each person. How am I going to save that information? So if somebody else comes in and reads the file. So just really figuring out ways to be very communicative with my clients, with my team, and then making sure, did you find value in this service? Here's the bill. Thank you. And let's stay in relationship. Because there's a certain point, and I know this happens with a lot of accountants, they struggle financially January, February, March, because they don't collect money until April or May, right? And a lot of people go out and borrow a couple $100,000 to pay the staff. I happen to be at a seminar, and I'm always trying to learn something because I lots to learn.
Sure.
And I was at a seminar, and this guy said, look, here's what I do. I charge people, I estimate what I think their bill is going to be, and I charge it up front. They have to pay 100% up front before I do the work. And I was like, that's a little crazy, but maybe I'm willing to do 30% or come up with some retainer numbers. And so I reached out to all my clients, email and phone, and I said, would it be weird if I were to actually ask you to pay some money up front? Because here's my reasoning. I want to be able to focus on your taxes and not having to worry about the money. And a lot of people in my business struggle with that. What are your thoughts? Everybody was like, tell us where, how much, when, whatever we need to do. And that changed my business model because I would go into tax season with a couple $100,000, just cash flush. I didn't have to worry about anything except focusing on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that an interesting, I guess the word would be juxtaposition of CPAs and accountants having to take a loan to make payroll during the busiest time of their year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I get it. I'm not trying to knock them, but it's interesting. You know, I chuckled when you said you didn't have time to bill. We have a local plumber that we use. And actually we have a toilet that we should replace here, and I'm going to here at the house. And, but I'm always hesitant to call him because his billing, yeah, he's a one man guy, right? He's just a guy in a truck. Talk about happiness,
right?
His gift, he loves it, provides for everything he wants in life and everything he needs, except sending a bill on time. Years ago, first home my wife and I had, we had a lot of plumbing that we did as we, you know, planned the house. We did a kitchen and we did a bathroom downstairs. And then we moved out of this house that we finally got the way we wanted. But anyhow, there was that chasing comparison moment that I lived in at one point. So we sold this house. We had them do some work. We get a bill 9 months later. And it just felt so awful to pay for this couple who kind of was a pain in the ass,
right,
when we closed, you know, and kind of hammered us a little bit because this was the summer of 08. So they knew we were kind of in a position where we kind of had to go along with their request.
Exactly.
And like 9 months later, the following March, I'm paying this bill for this plumbing work that a house that I don't even live in anymore.
Right.
And it's not that I didn't owe it and I was happy to pay it. It's just, I didn't feel good about it.
Exactly. I've gotten that, a legal bill 15 months later. And yeah, I know I owed it, but seriously, It just doesn't feel as good. But in that moment where I've saved people taxes and they get the bill, man, they can't pay it fast enough. Let me double down. Let me tip you. Let me.
Right.
So get them while they're feeling good.
Yeah. There it is, folks. Tipping culture coming to your local CPA. I'm just kidding on that. Just kidding on that.
We're going to start. We're going to start. We won't. Drives me crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about the more, I guess, ethereal, atmospheric thoughts around money. So can you really have, like, I'll set the table this way. One of my mentors in life, Dan Kennedy, longtime direct response copywriter, marketer, written a bunch of books, mentor turned customer turned friend, he has a deep belief that there's a relationship of money and that money respects what you said, good process, good procedure, appreciation of your clients, you know, doing work, like working hard for him to the point where, you know, he was somebody that worked largely on retainer. Work only began if money was in hand. Mm-hmm. And still, I believe he does this to this day, even after almost passing away from major complications due to diabetes, and he's now still working, but on a reduced scale. I believe he still does this to this day, where every week his assistant gives him what's coming in and what's going out on the business side, on the personal side, what's been the uptick in investments, what's been the losses, you know, and that's not an easy thing because, you know, Dan over the years, he had horses, he had like 40 horse stable, a racehorses. You know, he had his investments, he had businesses. So it wasn't an easy thing, but every week he understood in and out. And he respected what he felt were those core tenets of the relationship with money. What is your philosophy about having this real relationship with money?
Yeah, I believe it is a relationship. I want everybody to work on having a healthier relationship with money. Doesn't mean you have to be super rich. It means you're comfortable with what you have, spending within your means, being able to make choices, to do things that fulfill you. If we don't know our story about money and we don't get conscious about it, that money story is going to be running us anyway. And it's going to be costing us, whether it's emotional, whether it's financially. And so to me, if we don't start getting clear about what is it I want to do, why do I want to have this money? How is it going to serve me? And actually get real clear about it. Because what's interesting is I do a lot of workshops and I speak with a lot of people and I'll say, who wants to be rich? I do, right? And what's rich? And rich for some people is $100,000, $50,000, $20 million. And then I'll say, what do you think of rich people? Rich people suck. They're evil. Wait, so you want to be this rich person, but you despise them. So we have all these complicated contradictions. And until we can start to get clear about it and saying, oh, wow, if I have more money, I can impact the world more positively. I will actually be able to have freedom of time. I will have freedom of choice. And the more, again, it doesn't have to be, I have to be a billionaire. I think there's so many people think we have to have more at the expense of relationship, at the expense of taking in the view. Life's the journey. I don't want to get to the end until I really have to. I want to delay and delay, and I want to have a really fun time. Even if it's a roller coaster, I prefer to be on the roller coaster than end it. So just starting to get aware of what are my beliefs around money? What's the story I've been telling myself? And is it serving me? Because if it's not, how do I show up in a different way so that I'm actually serving myself and, for me, serving humanity? Because I think that's what we're here for.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where, is that where you recommend people to begin?
Yep.
You know, that understanding of why they want money.
Yeah.
You know, what is in, what's in it that's for them? And what does it, who and what does it serve? What purpose? Is that where they start?
Yeah. So for me, it's the excavation. Like, what are my stories? What did mom and dad tell me? If I grew up in the church, what did the church tell me? What did my culture tell me? What did they say? What did they not say? What were the looks I got? Was it okay to talk about money? Start with all those things. What's going on now? And don't judge it, right? Oh my God, my parents were terrible. They didn't know it. No. Wow. My parents gave me what they gave me. Find everything interesting. Get really curious. I think this is the most important piece, starting to just dig. Oh, I remember that time when I was 4 and I lost some milk money and everybody laughed at me. Or I was on the lunch program at school and everybody teased me. I couldn't take high school trip because we didn't have money. What are those stories that you started taking in and then holding them as truths about your own value? To me, that's where we start. And then start to explore, what am I afraid of? Where am I holding back? One of the things that I like to do with people, it's what I call what, why, why, what? What do I want? Why do I want it? Why don't I have it? What am I willing to do to get it? Because sometimes people are like, yeah, I'm not really willing to do anything. Okay, well, there's your answer.
Or, right.
And even if the answer, even if one of the what's is, you know, I want a fancy car. Why do you want it? I want to look super cool. There's not a judgment there. Okay, maybe that is why I want it, because I want to look cool. So maybe I'm going to make really super good deals or buy things used so I can look cool, right? So I'm not judging the motive, but I need to understand, and I think it's important people understand, what do I want? Why do I want it? Why don't I have it? What am I willing to do? Because a lot of people aren't willing to do to actually have what they want.
Yeah. Yep. I love that. I can take what you just shared through the context of my oldest boy. You know, his dream car is an Audi RS. And I said, okay, well, you go to Career Center, he liked construction. That's what he got a certificate in and graduated with. Turns out he didn't really like it.
Right.
Yeah. I think in part it was the company he started with. I don't feel that they had really great process procedure to onboard a new young kid, you know, dealing with a lot of crotchety old foremen that, you know, and I told him he's going to have to take his lumps, and he was prepared for that. He certainly wasn't raised in a house here where he was coddled and protected from the harshities of the world and workplace. But, you know, the thought was, hey, all right, you get into the trades, you can, around here, you start as a kid, you could make 45, 50 grand a year. You get with the right company, the right crew. Might not be that first job, but you can get there.
Right.
Live at home for a few years, you'll get that Audi RS real quick. Well, the work is hard. And what he really wants in life is really to be in fitness and be working on his body.
Yep.
You know, get to a certain weight, certain muscle tone, what's that body fat percentage number, I guess? Well, that's all cool and well, but if you're beating yourself up for 10 hours a day, you're not going to get there on those numbers.
Right.
And so for him, he came to learn that what do you want and what are you willing to work for and to get? And suddenly the car wasn't that important, that personal health and well-being was important for him. And so he's that's, I think, a really great application of that. How did you say it? What, why, what?
That's right. What, why, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I don't know that I did it all in the linear motion, you know, but I think I covered them.
Yeah. You got there. And you know, the other thing that you said, which I think is so important for people, this was important for me and I did not know this. And because I wasn't raised this way, you actually can change your mind and pivot. If something's not working in your life, you don't have to live with it for the rest of your life. You can actually say, I'm going to do something different based on information. I'm going to go in this direction. And it took me a long time to learn that. And I love that your son's, you know, looking and saying, okay, well, college wasn't for me. I want to go into this trade. Oh, this place isn't for me. I'm going to keep looking. And I think a lot of times people just say, oh, it's too much work, or this is what I deserve. So I'm not actually going to pivot.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, on that note, I think as, you know, you're an employer, I'm an employer. I think it's incumbent in people who listen to the show, own businesses or employers or manage people, lead. So if we get a lot of people leaving, we got to ask ourselves why.
Yeah.
We got to almost do that. What, why, what exercise, mm-hmm. right? And go ahead. I'll let you.
I was going to say, you know, so one of the things, it was interesting early on, I was talking with one of my employees about something and I tend to set the bar high and I have a lot of expectation. And my employee said to me, well, would you want to work for yourself? You expect us to do really good work. And I said, yeah, I'm not gonna ask people to rise to mediocrity. But I do think it's an important question as a business owner. Would I work for myself? And would I engage with my company? Because if we're not acting out about ourselves, like, then we're not willing to really look. And for me, we have to keep self-examining. And so to me, yeah, would I want to work here? Yeah, I think so. I try to really create an environment where people can communicate, come to me. If somebody leaves, I'm not, oh, you're horrible. You've left me after all I've done. I'm like, good for you. Keep going down your path, right? Not everybody's here to serve me their whole life. And so being willing to let people go. And so I want to create that space where people can grow and thrive. And even if it's not with me, ultimately forever, even though secretly I want everybody to stay forever, right? And then am I doing the kind of business that I would actually want that kind of service? And am I feeling, would I feel satisfied? And there have been times where we've fallen short and I'm like, man, I would have dropped us like a hot potato. And you have to ask those questions.
Yep. It reminds me, so what you shared there, you know, some of my proudest moments of brick and mortar store ownership have been, because really that's the only business I've owned where I've had employees. Everything else has been that like kind of solopreneur.
Yeah.
It's me. I'm the 1099 guy or whatever.
Right.
But some of the proudest moments there are when we had a guy, you know, he was a stay-at-home dad, came back on with us on the truck, then rose to be our operations manager. He since has moved on with his family in upstate New York. Well, when he left, he told us they were on the verge of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And I never knew that, you know, but we gave him the chance to start and to grow. And over those years, he quickly reset and then thereafter got himself into a position where that happiness factor, man, he's got it. Cause you know, their house up here, they were able to sell at a very nice price in the last year it was. And, you know, they're living in a little home in upstate New York, kind of like the idyllic countryside. And that's happiness. And I'm happy we were part of that. I'm happy we were able to help somebody else. Catholic guy who's like seemingly every time we turned around had kids. And we just couldn't give him the weekends or the evenings because it's retail.
Right.
But we helped him to get to a spot where he could. And now we're his customer. For that print and, you know, print and mail service company that he works for. And those are some of my proudest moments, I think, as an employer.
Yeah. I think that stuff is so important because just like he is finding his happiness factor, I think sometimes we get to this place of, I gotta have more. And we're not actually present to what's happening. And for me, I always ask myself, am I having fun? Because at the end of the day, if I'm not having fun, yes, there will be some moments that are not fun. But overall, if I'm not having fun, if I'm not finding fulfillment, I need to move on because life's short. Life is short. And I want to maximize my moments.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Bob, I've had just a lot of fun talking with you. You've got a lot to give people, both some laughs, some real tactical advice. You've certainly got the basis of experience to share. What's the best way for people to continue this conversation with you? You can get your book, The Money Nerve. It's on Amazon. We've had that up on the screen. Yeah, you know what? You were on Dr. Phil. I wanted to ask you about that. We'll cover that before you go. But where is the best place for people to connect with you?
Yeah, the best place, Instagram, Money You Should Ask, and info at the Money Nerve. If you want to send us an email, info@themoneynerve.com. We love to chat with people, engage with people. We've got a lot of great free resources. And just reach out. We will respond. We will respond.
Love it. Yep. Love it. And you're a CPA with a TikTok too, which you wouldn't think, TikTok, CPA, but comedian, TikTok 100%.
Yeah. Well, I've got a good team of people that make me do things above and beyond my comfort zone. So I'm out there doing whatever. My God. You gotta just go with it. You gotta roll with it. Have a little fun. That's what life's about.
Yep. Yep. So Money You Should Ask on Instagram, TikTok at bob.wheeler, the Money Nerve books on Amazon. Really, you should be checking out Bob and all those places if you want to do podcasts, the Money You Should Ask podcast as well. So as we wrap up, tell us how you got on Dr. Phil and what the experience was like.
Yeah, a friend of mine saw that Dr. Phil was looking for some people to talk about money, and I think he was looking for some people that were in social media and all that stuff. And he was just really interested. Dr. Phil was interested, I guess, in my money and emotion piece. And so I had to do a couple little videos about, my thoughts on certain things and sort of auditioned, and they brought us in. There were three of us that got to come in, and we were laughing because it was very surreal. We're like, oh my God, we're about to go on national television. Is this real? But it was a lot of fun. And I love that Dr. Phil's out there having conversations about money and what's going on in people's real lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love that you had that opportunity. One last question for you. What's the next mountain?
What's the next mountain? I want to go to Japan. Mount Fuji, I think, is really where I want to go. I just haven't gotten over there yet, but I think that's going to be the next one. It's not too high. It's a pretty popular mountain.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, looks great on a postcard. So I hope to see you. I hope to see you get that image and put it all over your social someday and check that box. And then you get to go on to the next one. Exactly. Bob, I really appreciate you stopping by, sharing some of your knowledge and wisdom around the topic of money. It's something that everybody should connect to. It's something we all need. We got to understand what is about that, why we want it, who we're going to serve, how we're going to serve, and what it means for us. So themoneynerve.com. Bob Wheeler, thank you, sir, for being on the show.
Jeff, I appreciate the opportunity, and I love talking money. We all work with it, so let's enjoy it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Bob, thank you. And for everybody else, I hope you enjoyed this show. Please be sure to subscribe, like the show, share it. We give you many ways to do that wherever you take it in. So please do. Until then, we will see you next week on The Big Ticket Life. Take care.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of The Big Ticket Life. You've heard from another amazing guest living their own big ticket life. And now it's time to live yours. First, I'd love for you to take me up on my free gift to you. Claim your gift at gift.bigticketlife.live. That's gift.thebigticketlife.live. See, all your life you've been told what is and what isn't possible by the loudest voices from the cheapest seats. It's time to finally do life and business on your terms. Sure, you've heard similar things, but without clarity on what can be done, it's easy to have your customers, employees, maybe even partners, and your spouse keep you from truly living a big ticket life. My big ticket methods shift you into that investor seat in your business, away from commodity and away from competition, into a market of one, so you can finally live your own big ticket life. So my gift to you is for you to book your discovery call today, where we'll uncover first the CHEVO behaviors, those chief everything officer behaviors that hold you back, and why moving into the investor seat in your own business is critical. Two, we'll uncover the premium position that's up for grabs right now in your market that you're missing out on. And three, which big ticket methodologies are just waiting to be dropped into your business to explode your sales and profits. So again, thanks for listening to this episode. I'd love for you to take action right now, accept this gift, book your call, go to gift.thebigticketlife.live. Again, that's gift.thebigticketlife.live.